Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Takeout ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. Sound the gifting panic alarm. We've all been there. You need to find the perfect gift. You have absolutely zero ideas and you don't know where to start. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. Just answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like, and Gift Mode gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Imagine pages of artisan espresso mugs for the coffee connoisseur in your life. Or for the pickleballer, customized paddle covers in every shade imaginable. Etsy's got you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
Please welcome Major Garrett.
From the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, I.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. Welcome to Daru, our restaurant. Never been here before. We are on the H Street Corridor section of Washington, D.C. Happy to be here. So this is Earth Week. That's a human invention. Earth's been around for 4.9 billion years. It doesn't need a week. Every week's Earth Week for the Earth. Humans invented all this. We've been around about 200,000 years. There are 8 billion of us on the planet now, which is 7% of all human beings who've ever occupied planet Earth. So there's some stats to think about. We have a special guest to have this conversation about where we are with the Earth, climate, and other policy. White House climate advisor to President Biden, Ali Zaidi. Ali, it's great to see you.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So I want my audience to get to know you a little bit. You are from Pakistan, originally Karachi, but you spent most of your youth and all of your college matriculation in America. Tell me your story.
Yeah, so born in Karachi and then moved in first grade to Edinburgh, Pennsylvania.
Which is near?
Which is right south of Erie, Pennsylvania. South enough to get hit by the lake effect snow.
Okay.
And just the sort of most phenomenal, tight-knit community. The perfect place to live out what's been my American dream.
And what did that experience tell you about America?
I think we're an incredibly resilient people, decent, generous, welcoming. And, you know, there are forces, narratives, people who try to pull us off of that. But that's our core. That's who we are. That's what my family experienced. And I think we're best when we're expanding the rungs of the ladder of opportunity, opening our arms, lifting people up. That's what the folks of Edinburgh, Pennsylvania taught me.
Pennsylvania bookends a lot of fossil fuel conversations in this country. The very first oil was found in Pennsylvania, not Texas, folks. Look it up. And in the revolutionary period of energy now, domestically, hydraulic fracturing is a very big part of Pennsylvania. Natural gas and other forms of fossil fuels are a big part of the economy in Pennsylvania now. How does that inform your perspective as President Biden's top climate advisor?
Yeah, I remember on a high school field trip going to Titusville, Pennsylvania, Oil City. We played the Oilers if we were good enough to get out of the region. You know, Pennsylvania is, I think, a case study in the story of rebirth and renaissance, of turning setback to comeback, and using clean energy and climate as the spur to get the job done. You know, think about Erie, Pennsylvania, where there was this locomotive factory, went out of business, and no one necessarily saw a path back. Today, they're making electric locomotives at that facility. You've got people who I think have been involved in the fossil industry that are now at the frontier of geothermal in Pennsylvania. You've got a steel industry that's setting the pace for the world, I think, in cleaning up and producing clean steel. These are iconic American industries. And what we realize is if we invest in the workers and invest in our industrial backbone, what comes out the other end is America leading in an essential fashion at an urgent moment.
Yes or no? You just mentioned clean steel. You believe that's a thing that actually exists, clean steel?
I literally have clean steel sitting on my desk that was forged, and we just actually invested $6 billion as a federal government. Clean steel, clean aluminum, clean flat glass, these construction materials mm-hmm. that we thought for so long were impossible to decarbonize.
And is that what clean means, decarbonize, or do you mean cleaner as compared to its other previous manufacturing?
So there's cleaner and there's truly 100% clean. The stuff I've got on my desk is 100% net zero emissions. But I had a great trip to Toledo, Ohio, where there used to be a brownfield. They've now stood up a cleaner steel facility, mm-hmm. cleaner than the stuff we would have imported from China. And it's, you know, U.S. steel workers forging that stuff, out-competing their counterparts around the world.
Is there such a thing as clean coal?
You can burn coal cleanly, and it's not a hypothetical thing. Air Products, which is a company... I'm like a showcase for Pennsylvania right now, but a company outside of Allentown, they have manufactured a technology, carbon capture, which catches the emissions when they're produced and puts it into the ground as opposed to having it go into the sky. That's a technology, I think, that will scale up in certain places. It's not for everybody, but we need a diversity of resources, nuclear, geothermal, solar, wind, storage. And yes, carbon capture sequestration is absolutely part of that.
Is there such a thing as clean concrete?
Yeah, and better than that, there is now technology that actually will sequester, meaning breathe in and then put into the concrete carbon that's already ambient in our environment. So it's actually a net sink of CO2, which for me... kind of nerdy, but that's a huge deal.
And all these things we've just described, they're at the fractional edge of manufacturing and global economy, right?
It's fractional, but boy, you know, I think about the early years of the Obama administration when the Recovery Act was being implemented by Vice President Joe Biden. I was around at the time. Solar and wind and batteries were on the fractional edge. They were just coming up that curve. That's probably where some of these industrial decarbonization technologies are today. But
so,
you know, within a decade,
tell you what does that experience that you've observed tell you about these things that are currently fractional but may grow?
I think it tells us two things. One, that this is going to keep racing out in front, and whatever our projections are, same as EVs, right? We used to look at that and say, oh, you know, we'll get to 1%, 2%. A decade and a half from now, we've hit those targets way early. So I think our sense of what is possible is likely to be exceeded by what reality delivers. But the second is there's going to be a massive global competition on this stuff, and we've got a race ahead.
And the marketplace is driving this, or government?
both. You know, the marketplace...
By percentage.
By percentage. I think that the market is responding to a felt reality imposed by folks who are just sick and tired of breathing in gunk. So there is a lot of social pressure on companies to clean up their act. That translates through government as well in form of standards and regulations. But I think the companies are feeling that directly as well.
You mentioned EVs. I'll have that conversation with you in one of our next segments. Very quickly, this is Earth Week. Will the president this week or in any future week in this term declare a climate emergency?
The president's used emergency authorities, the Defense Production Act, other emergency tools. When people refer to climate emergency, they're referring to a lot of different statutory authorities. And this president is firm on one thing, and that is if he's going to use a tool, it better stand up. It better have a good legal foundation. And so, you know, won't rule out or rule in hypotheticals. What I will say is we've used emergency tools and we're unafraid to use more if they are justified.
And for those who say a declaration would be entirely symbolic, you are saying that's not true.
I think there are some ideas that have been floated that would be symbolic, that wouldn't deliver an impact on the ground, certainly not of the scale that is being delivered by the president's agenda right now. But there are other ideas that may have a lot of merit, and we're continuing to test the legal foundation and figure out how they can be administrable and efficacious.
That is the voice of Ali Zaidi. He is the president's White House climate advisor. We at Daru, some of our appetizers have arrived. Our conversation will continue on the other side of this break.
If you're constantly on the hunt for a good deal, then you need Rakuten. Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, traveling, dining, and more. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cashback really adds up.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Daru is our host restaurant. Boy, am I glad that we showed up here. Yikes, this is so good. Ali Zaidi is our special guest, White House climate advisor. We were talking about EVs, electrical vehicles. The International Energy Agency predicts in 2024, one in five light-duty vehicles will be EVs. That, I guess, would be the good news. Here's the bad news. 60% of them will be sold in China, 25% in Europe, 10% in the United States. How far behind, and what is the answer to the lagging market share of EVs in America?
You know, what's crazy is this is technology that was invented in our national labs and in our universities. The Nobel Prize for the lithium-ion battery that moves this stuff was given to professors here in the United States. And then we watched all of these jobs go overseas. When the president took office, the United States was lagging the world in attracting private investment on EVs. Today, we are the number one national destination for private investment, $210 billion. So the question of how do you reverse course, how do you fix the trajectory we've been on, is to invest in our workers, invest in our industry, and to have the United States be the sort of market that facilitates more private capital coming in. That's the playbook we've taken. And the results are, I think, very dramatic, from laggard to China and others to positioning in the lead on private investment. those battery jobs that went away, bringing those back, 15 gigafactories announced to be built in the United States. And, you know, for all the fear-mongering, this has been, I think, a boon to U.S. industry. And you've got the UAW doing just a tremendous job translating that to win for workers.
Right, but you must have some thoughts on what can only be described as a charitable description, fickle U.S. consumer, not hot on EVs. There are stories you can find in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere about a reassessment of the automakers in this country about the marketability of EVs. A recent story I read said that what consumers are embracing is not EVs, they're embracing hybrids, a 25-year-old technology that merges internal combustion engine and a electrification model. But they like those. They don't like EVs. They're too expensive, even with tax credits. And they are concerned about long-range travel because there are not enough charging stations. How do you address those issues?
So plug-in hybrids, I think, are a good market development. And they're not an accidental one.
Okay.
When we pass the tax credits, $7,500 for new, $4,000 for used, cash on the hood of the car. By the way, 11,000 dealerships have signed up to help us administer this program. We made it so that it's not just fully electric, but also plug-in electric that are eligible for this tax credit. When we set our standards, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Transportation, we've made hybrids a big part of that strategy. And this shift to plug-in hybrids is very different than the Priuses of 20 years ago.
Explain the difference to my audience college.
So number one, you actually can plug in. You can move fully on the electricity you're getting from the grid. You might never have to go to a gasoline station. You have the freedom to choose between those two sources of fuel. Number two,
the old technology was you had a battery and an internal combustion engine. No plug-in.
No plug-in. And basically, the gasoline was essentially getting extended mileage because it was helping charge the battery on occasion over time. Now you can directly charge the battery, and we're seeing the range on those plug-in hybrids go from 5, 10, 15 miles to 30, 40 miles for especially a customer who lives in an urban area, but I think increasingly for folks even in more rural communities. That plug-in range is enough to do a lot of their daily business. Now, I think the hybrid part of it helps for places where the charging network's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's a charging network we need to build out. The president set this goal of 500,000 chargers by 2030.
Correct.
We're going to hit that 4 years early.
You are.
But we're still at 175,000. So we've got a ways to go. And I think the plug-in hybrid piece of this helps us bridge that gap.
Explain to my audience how those charging station decisions are made. Where do they go? Who decides? How rapidly can they be stood up?
So different charging stations, and this is a little wonky, take a little bit of different time to build out. The fast charging, the super fast stuff that maybe gets you all charged up in 25, 30 minutes, that usually requires more electricity upgrades. So it takes more time to build out the super fast charging. The level two charging, the slower stuff that maybe helps you get a little bit extra juice so that you can continue your drive, that often can work off of the electricity network that already exists, so easier to install. And what we're finding is the private sector has been racing to deploy this stuff. We've gone and increased in just the last 3 years by 75% the amount of charging that's available, the public charging that's available. What's going to come in, thanks to federal resources, is this backbone in the places where people are least likely to go. And that's also essential. We now have plans from all 50 states to install chargers at every 50 miles on those roads as well.
And just for my audience's ability to comprehend this, when they think about a super fast charging station, where are they likely to find that? And if they are thinking about, well, I was at a hotel or motel recently, in the parking lot they had some chargers, What kind of chargers are those? Help them conceive in their mind what we're talking about.
Yeah, look, the utility...
And where they're likely to see these things that you've just described.
The utility usually tracks the use case, right? So at a hotel, you'll probably find the charger that takes all night to get you loaded up, which just makes sense because that's what you're doing.
And that fits into the existing grid. That does not require a huge upgrade.
Exactly. But maybe at a rest stop... or at a Wawa or a Sheetz, you'll find the faster chargers because they're on a highway. Mm-hmm. People need to get juiced up very quickly to keep going. So that you'll see that develop out. And what we're also seeing is retailers step in, Walmart, McDonald's, others building out chargers, and the utility companies themselves, Xcel Energy, others, investing in building out the charging network because it's good for business.
Address the commercial that Washingtonians and others who watch cable sports can see about a car ban. President Biden wants to ban internal combustion cars.
No ban. No ban at all. And I think this is the... You know, I think the cynicism of, by the way, who's funding those ads? It's the people who have the monopoly on how you get from point A to point B, right? It's
the current monopoly.
The current monopoly. And, you know, I get it. If you've been selling petroleum, that's all you do. It makes sense that if there's competition, you're trying to box it out. But there is no ban. There is only, I think, a focus on building out the choice for the American consumer who wants to buy an electric vehicle. We believe you should be able to buy an American-made EV. That's not true everywhere else, especially as China races out to try to dominate this market.
I want to start this conversation and carry it over to segment three. Gina McCarthy, you used to work for. You were her deputy. She was the White House climate advisor to President Biden. She was on this program several years ago and said, I've been in this movement, Major Garrett, for 40 years, and for 30 years I was a doom loop. Everything is, the sky is falling, it's all catastrophic. I'm no longer there. There is a conversation now going on, even though people who identify with this issue are deeply concerned and deeply worried, that is trying to find some sort of structural, intellectual, foundational optimism about this. Where are you?
I am 100% in the optimism camp. And I think we have the fact basis to back that up. But I also think that's what propels us to go faster and faster, which we must. We just sort of recline back into doom and gloom. We're not going to move any faster. We're not going to build the political economy. We're not going to build the coalitions to get where we need to go. You know, this sky turning orange, people breathing smoke into their lungs, the fury of the floods and the hurricanes, that's felt. But I think what's more powerful is that feeling of, we came together and we accomplished something.
There's optimism apparently that can be found in floods and hurricanes and other disasters related to climate change. That's the voice of Ali Zaidi. We will continue that conversation on the other side of this break. I'm Major Garrett. Segment three of the Takeout coming your way in just 1 minute. Welcome back to the Takeout. Dalru is our host restaurant. Outstanding food. Ali Zaidi is the White House advisor on climate to President Biden, our special guest. NOAA recently published climate forecasts for this summer. It said only one state in the lower 48, North Dakota, can expect or have equal chances of below average, average, or above average temperatures this summer. Every other state in the lower 48 can expect average or above average temperatures this summer. Where's the optimism there?
Look, this is our new normal, and I think it should impress upon us the urgency to move faster. It should motivate us not only to tackle the emissions, but also to help fund adaptation and resilience in the face of these impacts. But, you know, the same folks who fed us disinformation about climate change, now they've sort of grown tired of saying it's not happening at all because of the facts that you point out. Now what they say is there's no solution to it. We should resign ourselves to this and maybe, you know, move to higher ground, maybe buy an air conditioner and that's it. But we know what the root cause is. And we also know that investing in the root cause solutions creates jobs, creates economic opportunity, helps us get after environmental injustice. So look, I think you can be moved to alarm recognize the sense of emergency and urgency, but channel that into solutions. I think there are folks who'd rather channel that into just giving up.
Right, and you don't blame kids for getting bummed out when they read about coral reefs dying, when they read about deforestation, when they read about methane being released in peat moss areas in the far northern part of Russia, and large ice sheets collapsing into the ocean. All those things are real. Not one of those things I've described isn't happening. All of them can be fairly and scientifically attributed to one factor. You understand why they're bummed out and can feel like there's no hope, right?
Yeah, look, the loss is real, and I think we have to give ourselves the time and space to feel that, pain. But the question is, what do you channel that into? Do you get stuck there, or do you find a way forward? And I think, you know, there are a lot of young people who've marched, and as a result, we have a president who's conserved 41 million acres of land and water in his first term. There are a lot of those young people who have marched, and as a result, we passed the largest climate bill in the history of the country. That's who I draw my inspiration from. Not folks who are closing their eyes to the impacts, but those who are translating that into a sense of urgency and a push for action.
Our research team presented this question to me. President Biden has approved 50% more oil and gas drilling permits on federal land than President Trump did in his first 3 years. How does that balance with what you just said?
Yeah, it's a misleading statistic, and I'll tell you why. When you lease public lands, they're for the purpose of oil and gas development, there follows a essentially contractual obligation to facilitate the purpose for the lease. So you had a president, Donald Trump, who rolled back a bunch of safeguards, erased climate from the way government was operating.
The lexicon.
And took it out of the lexicon. Yeah, and had a leasing bonanza. And the result of that, we're a rule of law administration, the result of that is that leasing bonanza has after effects. All of the actions he's taken have after effects. What we've done is come in and put a very different leasing posture forward, a much more targeted leasing posture, and focus our energy on massively expanding conservation efforts, massively expanding things like offshore wind. Offshore wind in the previous administration was just a twinkle in the eye. Now we've got massive acres leased under this administration and turbines in the sky pumping clean electricity onto the grid. Not like a fiction, a real life thing. So look, this goes to the point of leadership matters. And the decisions the federal government makes have aftershocks for decades in certain cases. We've got to do our best to move in the direction of clean.
Do you believe, as many have suggested, that Europe was incautious in its transition, found itself caught between energy shortages, and did not properly prepare itself with fossil fuels in reserve for a green energy future?
I think there are two lessons that I draw from the European experience. And I say this with, I think, a great sense of the Europeans have been inventive and creative and progressive and successful in many cases. The first lesson is the Yellow Jackets lesson. France took steps around essentially pricing pollution, which is a good concept. I think without doing the spade work, the foundational political economy development that was necessary for it to be durable. President Biden's, I think, genius in the way he's pursued climate action is he's built it with the electricians and the building trades and the steel workers blue-collar jobs are green-collar jobs today because of the investment he's made in connecting our economic success and our environmental success. So that's lesson number one, is that is an essential part of sustaining the trajectory. And I think the second is, look, at the end of the driveway for millions of Americans, the car that's parked there today is the car that's going to be parked there tomorrow. And we've got to meet them where they are. Jacking up fuel prices is just not an option if you want durable long-term change. The president's gotten us through a massive economic crisis onto the other side of a COVID pandemic, and he's maintained and built stability. He's protected the American people from the worst effects of Russia's aggression, Ukraine, the impacts on the global energy market. That's a big part of leading. And you've got to do that if you want to actually sustain the progress you want to make on clean energy. You got to solve for the near term as well.
What does a Biden reelection mean for climate policy that it doesn't mean currently?
Look, I think we've got to finish the job in so many areas. And this goes to what we were talking about earlier. You know, you've had solar technology, which was cultivated over the last several decades. Now it's dominating, right? We're building gigawatts upon gigawatts of solar. You've got 260,000 some people in America working solar jobs now. But in other
more than in the coal industry.
Far more, far more. And in other places, though, I think we're just in the early innings of scale up. The industrial decarbonization work, linking that to our trade policy, a really important measure. Scaling up climate smart agriculture. We've got now about 80,000 farms that are signed up for climate smart, but we've got a long ways.
What is that?
That's folks implementing practices like no-till agriculture or cover cropping and getting compensated for the value they're providing to the environment. Progress in the building sector, switching to heat pumps, building out our transmission wires and improving our grid, which will cut rates, boost reliability, boost resilience. This stuff takes time. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, we've got to work with Congress on some of this to further invest in our workers, in our communities, in our industrial capacity to meet this moment.
I'm not going to ask you another question because I've got 20 seconds before I go to break. So I'm just going to say we're going to continue our conversation with White House climate advisor Ali Zaidi. Daru is our host restaurant. Delighted to be here. We're going to get to this break slightly early. We'll be back in a minute. Segment four of The Takeout coming your way in just 1 minute. See, I took up all that time. 20 seconds. I just do it. I just babble.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Ali Zaidi is our special guest, White House climate advisor, President Biden. I want to talk to you about some very new CBS polling on the environment. 45% of the people we talk to describe climate change as a very important issue. Of those, this will not surprise you, 69% voted for President Biden in 2020. 66% of them identify themselves as Democrats. 51% are between the ages of 18 and 35. Here's something you may not know. When we asked these people who identified climate as a very important issue to them and ask them, how much have you heard or read about Biden policies on this issue that you care about? 49% answered, not much, nothing. 10% said, a lot. That sounds to me like a problem for you.
Look, I think we've gone through a moment where there's been a lot of big news, right? We came in, the president talked about the multiple crises that face the country, the COVID pandemic looming the largest for a lot of Americans. Then we went through an economic revitalization, rebuilding supply chains, getting people back in jobs. So it was shots in arms, then it was people back on their feet economically, big pieces of business. And then in the backdrop, massive things taking place internationally, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Right, so let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
The people we are talking to are not the generic Americans. They're the people who are hungry to read about this, who I've identified this as a high priority item, and they're still not hearing it.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that other than to us pushing harder and harder to reach them, because from day one, the president signed us back into Paris. A few months later, he brought
the Paris Climate Accord,
which the previous administration had left. A few months later, he brought the whole world together, major economies around emissions reductions at the White House, set a target to reduce emissions by 50%. That fall, he went to the Glasgow Climate Conference, brought folks together around reducing methane emissions and slowing down deforestation. He then passed a bipartisan infrastructure law, which invested the biggest investment ever in resilience, in grid, in getting lead pipes out, in EV charging, nationwide network. Then, you know, continued, passed the Inflation Reduction Act, a massive piece of legislation that sparked 2,000 projects already constructed because of the president's leadership. So, look, I think it's a noisy media environment. There's a lot going on, and it's on us to help people connect the dots. But the transformation's taken place, and the president, I think, has been at this aggressively every single day.
A recent study, which I found to be somewhat alarming, I think you will too, pegged the cost of climate change for the global economy at $38 trillion a year. $38 trillion a year by the year 2049. Do you believe that?
Look,
do you reasonably fear that could be true?
I fear that could be true. You know, we see the cost show up in the built environment.
That's a bummer.
It's a wrecking. Yeah.
That'll bum you out.
It'll bum you out. And I think it is the most powerful rebuttal to folks who, you know, would rather roll back the tax credits that are creating jobs in their backyard because it tackles climate change and it's violated some political mantra of theirs in the name of some sort of fiscal conservatism. I think it's a powerful rebuttal to that. Not only are these investments driving real massive gains on the ground in terms of jobs, in terms of well-being, but they're also helping us, hopefully, address this massive cliff if we get everything right.
You've heard this argument. I want you to address it. Whatever America does is inconsequential if China and India are not on board. Full stop. What are we doing this to ourselves for? You've heard that argument.
I have. And, you know, I think the most powerful tool in driving global climate action is the United States leadership. It has been the essential nation in driving progress forward. Take methane, for example. The U.S. started with a few countries, gathered more under President Biden's leadership. Over 100 countries joined. And then, all of a sudden, you had a breakthrough with China, finally bringing methane emissions into their nationally determined contribution. More work to do there. But that's how we make progress. You know, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is set to reduce U.S. emissions by a gigaton, is projected to reduce emissions by 2x that amount around the world Because we're going to de-risk the technologies, lower their costs, and make it easier for other countries to adapt. So, look, I think whether it is by strengthening our hand in negotiation or by driving down the cost of the technology and de-risking it, what we do here matters. It matters so much in this decisive decade.
Talk to me before we go about renewables and the grid, that there is a mismatch between renewable energy and its functionality and its input and throughput in the grid.
Look, number one, we
It's a real deal. It's a real issue.
Look, it's a non-trivial issue, but we now have low-cost storage technology, which allows us to capture that solar and wind energy when the sun's shining and the wind's blowing for moments when it's not. We also have hydrogen technology so that we can convert that into a fuel, store it that way, and then burn it later if we need. And then you've got technologies like offshore wind that actually function from a capacity perspective the same way that a coal plant might, providing energy with that same regularity. Same with geothermal and nuclear. So it's not one technology. It's going to take all of these working in tandem, and the grid has to be able to be the conductor, the maestro of it, to be able to tap into all these resources. That's going to require investment. And it's investment we've started to make, but I think we've got a long ways to go.
And is that investment entirely going to come from the government?
No, I think the private sector is investing in it. I think utilities are stepping up. You've got equity that's flowing from private capital to build some of these transmission lines on a merchant basis. You've got, I think, a lot of sources of capital that will come in. But the federal government has a role to play for the things that benefit everybody. And that's, I think that's, we think there's more opportunity there.
I said at the top, it's Earth Week. That's kind of a human invention. But I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Ali Zaidi.
Thank you so
White
much.
White House Climate Advisor. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Stay tuned for your takeout outtake especial, folks. Daru Restaurant. Fantastic. So glad to be here. We'll see you next week. Welcome to your takeout outtake especial. I'm Major Garrett. You already knew that. Daru Restaurant is our host restaurant. Fantastic spread. We'll get to that on the other side of this. Ali Zaidi is our special guest, White House Climate Advisor to President Biden. One question before we get to our fun and games questions. When you think about climate and the next 10 years, what's the most interesting technology to keep an eye on?
Ooh. I think the carbon sequestration technology for construction materials, capturing the CO2 and then using it to make things like cement.
Could revolutionize.
So amazing.
Could revolutionize so much.
Yeah, it's better building product and also doing cleanup as opposed to just not putting stuff in the sky.
Okay. Three threshold questions. All our guests love these questions and our audience loves them even more. Take them whichever order you prefer. Most influential book in your life and why? All-time favorite movie? And if you're going to be in a long flight or a long drive and really enjoy some music, what artist or genre is that most likely to be?
Oh, goodness. Long drive, probably somewhere between James Taylor as the oldie version and Chris Stapleton as the still on the radio.
There you go. Fantastic.
I think that my... The other two are much harder.
Yes, they are. When you think about the movie, think about it this way, if it helps. You're scrolling through, and even if you've seen it 20 times, you'll stop.
Probably something really feel good, like a Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a great answer.
It might not be the one, but it's definitely that's my brand.
There you go. An important book in your life, and why?
I'm a general bias to poetry because you can get in and out.
Yep.
More effectively. I don't know.
Got to come up with something, Ali.
Clock's ticking, huh?
It's okay.
Yeah, I have a. I cannot nail it down.
Wow, that is a new achievement for this show. We have never stumped anyone, and I take that to be a very honest answer.
Yes,
I think it is quite possible that others have just thrown down something that isn't true. You did not. So I give you high marks for that, Ali. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week, folks.
Thanks so much.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp, Bank NA, or Stride Bank NA. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.